Hey, everybody. Good day. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Got the team here. Wade McFall wearing his advised t-shirt. It's good to see. Retired assistant special agent in charge from the LA field office. And now one of the managers on our SIU team. And Matt Kachansky, retired from the HHS OIG, then the Northeast U pick, where he was the director, and is now our SIU director. And I am still Eric Rubenstein, Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, and Abuse. We got a topic today. We want to kind of talk a little bit more. We talked last week in our podcast last week about transforming your SIU and ROI and modernizing your SIU. And part of that conversation was, you know, do you really need all the bells and whistles of a case management tool, all the bells and whistles of a data analytic tool? And today, I think we really want to spend some time talking, really highlighting the importance of low-cost technology for particularly smaller plans and really for the purposes of investigative intelligence, sources of information, the internet as an investigative tool, and the like. You know, what we have found is the big plans typically have a little bit of a better budget for things like analytic tools, investigative tools, case managers, and the like. And a lot of the clients that we have that our SIU team supports, a lot of our staff augmentation, a lot of the advisory consulting work that we do, a lot of our process improvement, training and education are really geared towards smaller and medium-sized plans. We do work with larger plans, but we tend to find that for us, the smaller and the medium-sized plans are the ones that tend to have the greatest difficulty staying afloat because of a combination of budget, resources, people power, and things of that sort. And, you know, we've talked to a lot of the plans that we deal with about lower cost solutions for data analytics, lower cost solutions for case management. And to an extent, that also then parlays itself into what are some lower cost or no cost investigative solutions. And, you know, one of the things that we were talking about before we started this podcast is the big companies that are out there, the BUCAs, the big insurance payers, oftentimes need to have pretty robust investigative tools because their plans oftentimes go across state lines. They're usually very complex frauds that go on because there's a lot more money involved. And smaller regional plans sometimes don't really see that because you're talking about membership of 40,000, 50,000 people, smaller provider network. It's usually a little bit more directed as far as investigative processes and things of that sort. But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be doing your due diligence. Are your providers, is there anything in their background that's problematic relative to what your issue is? So, Wade, I want to start with you because from an investigative perspective, right, we had the great fortune at the OIG of having the power of the federal government behind us, the authority and the ability to serve subpoenas, take affidavits, you know, extensive ability to do field interviews, surveillance, and all of the things involving the technical aspects of a criminal, civil, or administrative investigation that we had the ability to do that sometimes a smaller plan didn't have the ability to do. But that being said, we still sat at our desks and trolled the internet and, you know, did things like, you know, establishing cover identities for things like Facebook and the like, right? And there are a ton of these low-cost things that are out there. And it's just really all about finding where those sources are and then being able to use them on a regular basis. And it doesn't cost a lot of money. In some cases, it's nothing, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the key points is that I think Google is a good starting, you know, this might seem like the most obvious thing, but Google is a good starting off place because you can look for, you know, free HCPCS code searches or free CPT coaches or searches. So there's so many different options out there that are free, and some might have a small fee. I know there's one person search called Spokio or Spookio that gives you some general information right up front for free. But if you pay just a couple dollars, it goes even deeper and it's a really good source. But like you're talking about Facebook and Instagram, a lot of people, especially today, they put everything out there. So they're like really an open book. So that's a really good source. And like you said, a lot of times you'll need a cover identity to get in there, because you can't just go in as, you know, yourself. They'll see who's looking at their profile. But I think there is so much, and it might take some time to find these sites. And as we were talking about before, once you start getting your favorites going on your browser, once you find something good, you save it as a favorite, and pretty soon you have this long list of investigative resources that maybe you didn't know about even a couple months ago. So it's important to keep those and also save them for when you move on. Like if you move from a job to another job, the bookmarks stay with the computer if you end up getting a new computer. So you have to export those or put them into a spreadsheet, something of that nature. But that bookmark feature is great, because you can, it's just like it says, it's a bookmark, so you can just keep track of the things that you find valuable, go back and edit it out and delete things that end up costing too much or just don't get you the information that you really need.
Yeah, and we're actually in the process of having one of our summer interns compile as big of a list as he can put together with our input of different sites that you can go to, what that site is, what it provides. We're going to be putting that out for people who want it. We're just doing that as a free investigative tool for all of the people as kind of our thank you for participating in our podcasts and tuning into things of that sort. But, you know, it's simple things, like even something as simple as setting up a shell Facebook account, Instagram, LinkedIn, all of those things. People tend to put a lot of information on the internet, and a lot of that information they're not either making private or they're making it semi-private. But, you know, you hear stories of the doctor who billed for, you know, X number of dollars when they were on vacation out of the country, or, you know, on a family trip and or what have you. And you go up on their Facebook page or their Instagram or some other public, you know, TikTok reels, one of those. And you find that there's family photos, time and date stamped, of them on a trip or on a cruise or on a vacation. And then you just need to go and look at the billings, and, you know, here you go. Maybe you have a new area. Maybe the argument or the allegation was something unrelated to billing for services not rendered, right? Because they're out of the country. Now all of a sudden you've got a potential new area to explore. Things like publicly available information in state websites, right? You've got medical licensure, disciplinary records. While some disciplinary records, for example, in most states, when a provider has a malpractice case, there may be some information that shows that a payment was made, but there's no backstory. Those are typically sealed records. And while as the general public, we wouldn't have the ability to get that information, it certainly tells you that there's something that's there. And, you know, driver's license records, criminal histories, medical licensure. I think always it's important to, while you can look at things like Google reviews and things of that sort, a lot of that is with a grain of salt. You still need to do some independent digging and take a lot of the comments that people make, things like Indeed, Glassdoor. You have to take people's comments with a grain of salt, because if they have one bad interaction, you can oftentimes, you know, find that there's a lot of stuff in there that's not valuable. So you have to think about in terms of the probative value of the information that you've got. And so, Matt, so, you know, larger plans tend to spend money on tools that are out there that are pay services. And those pay services aren't really in reinventing the wheel. All they're doing is they're paying a particular state for certain information that you could either buy on your own on a subscription basis or something like that, or otherwise get if you know how to, you know, run your way around that website or something like that. But, you know, those are important tools, but they're really just compilers, right? For example, you know, Accurint is a common law enforcement tool, and a lot of the larger payers have subscriptions to Accurint. But Accurint is really just a tool. You still need to do independent verification, independent vetting. If you pulled an Accurint report on a provider and you saw that they had a valid license in a state, you should still be going to that state's website and determining, is the information on that website in real time, near real time? Is it dated? What is it, and how does it work? But from an ROI perspective and from a cost containment perspective, depending upon how deep your SIU team is investigating things, it's going to be a driving factor. If you're a smaller plan, maybe you don't need to spend a lot of time and effort in the background of the provider. If you're a 50,000 member plan and you've only got a couple of SIU people, it's all about, you know, either education, overpayment for the most part, those kinds of cases. And so you have to really weigh that ROI relative to the mission of that SIU or that payment integrity team.
Right. Yeah. The big tools, they're great. I mean, sometimes you have to take them with a grain of salt, even, you know, the clears and the accurates and things like that. You know, you look at their real estate listings and things like that. You can never tell which house they have now versus which ones they sold. There's different things you have to verify by going to the public records to get those things. And you might not even need those things unless you're doing asset forfeiture and things of that nature. You know, with the smaller plans, look at what the mission is. It's credentialing the employee, the providers to make sure they're good up front. It's making sure that their license is intact, that they don't have any discipline against them, that they hopefully don't have a lot of malpractice suits against them, things like that. It's making sure that you're identifying fraud trends and things like that. So there are public databases for all of that. You can look at things like GSA's website to go into, you know, what are some of the reports that GSA is putting out on healthcare fraud now? The same thing with the HHS-OIG. They put out their semi-annual reports. Their Office of Audits, their Office of Evaluation Inspections put out dozens of reports every year on things that they're looking at that are a problem in Medicare and Medicaid, that they're showing that, you know, what is the program vulnerability? You know, those are things that a small plan can look at to build up ideas for their own data analytics. PACER is a free web tool that you can see if someone has a criminal justice record. It's not like Westlaw that gets into all of the details, but it does show, you know, case numbers and whether they were adjudicated or not. And so, and it's a pay as you go. You don't, it's free membership and then pay as you go. So you can use it as little or as often as you want.
PACER is the repository. It's basically the electronic filing system, what they call the ECF, electronic case filing system for federal cases, criminal, civil, bankruptcy, all of that. And I think they just redid, because I have a PACER account, but you can get something like up to 100 pages for free to download. And then after that, it's something like 10 cents a page or something like that. But and every state or most states have a similar version, either in the state or in the county. So there are a lot of these parallels that exist.
Yep. And Wade talked about the state licensing and the state disciplinary boards. You know, there's something called Health Guide USA that it's one web page. It's got all the state licensing websites on it. So you can just go to that, and then you can go to each of the states after that. Secretary of State information is free information. If you're looking at a provider to see who their owners and controllers are, sometimes they file different people with the plan than they do with the state because they're disguising the fact of who owns them, because maybe that person actually has a program integrity history that would make you want to take a closer look at them. Secretary of State information might provide you that information that shows you the differences. Each state has one. Most are online. Some are manual. But again, you can just look them up.
Right.
United States Attorney's Office press releases, Attorney General's Office press releases. You can look at those to see, again, did one of your providers pop up in that? Or again, to get an idea for some of the fraud trends that are going on in your area of the country. So it's almost limitless to the amount of information you can get. You talked about the Yelps and things like that. There's also, you know, CMS's, LCDs, NCDs, policies. Wade talked about the definitions of the HCPCS codes and the CPT codes. All of them are online. The Medicare MLNs, the Medicare Learning Network stuff, all free, all out there. Shows you what the policies are, what the guidelines are, with some of the public comments that go with it. And, you know, the Federal Register is another one. It's all online. It's the most boring reading you ever have. But if you have to research a specific policy, it's there.
So right, but it's like it's like a two, there's two different pieces of that puzzle. So one is investigating the person or the entity, and the other one is investigating the allegation, right? And regardless what anybody says, when you're an SIU investigator, you're going to be presented with a new situation, even for the for an allegation that you're previously familiar with. You could have worked 100 podiatry fraud cases, but now, you know, number 101 is on something entirely different. The fact that it's a podiatrist doesn't change that, right? There's just that new piece. So you do become the subject matter expert on that case, and you've got to understand all of the aspects of the allegation, but all of it also involves understanding the, you know, the people and things of that sort. Number one is understanding your limits. And Matt, you said it the right way. It's limitless. What your limits are going to be is how good your ability is to do the searching. Mm-hmm. And the one thing about, we'll use Google as the example because it's the most popular search engine. But if you were to Google how to Google, you will actually get a web page that provides really, really detailed instructions on using different language, things in quotes, the Boolean logic of things. Does it go from flow to this or that? And that all comes, if you just look at how Google sets up its search parameters, you can really get very defined. Recently I started doing things where I'm pulling up Word documents and PowerPoints, and you can actually do specific searches in Google where you only get Word documents, PowerPoint, Excel spreadsheets, ChatGPT. We've done a lot of training on the SIU side. One of our SIU managers, really good with data, really good with ChatGPT, and I had one of the most eye-opening revelations when he showed me how to write a macro in Excel using ChatGPT. And he wrote in ChatGPT, he had ChatGPT write a macro on how to do some analytics, and then it provided a step-by-step guide how to input the information that ChatGPT. So ChatGPT did two things. It wrote the macro, and then it provided a cheat sheet of how to get the macro into Excel to run the data, right? So, you know, tons of free stuff out there. The biggest thing I think is that when you're looking into an individual is, did they have anything previously that is lending itself towards that intent for the current matter? And in some cases that may not be the case, but in some cases, what if you found a Google review or multiple Google reviews or Yelp reviews where people were complaining about not getting a certain item, service, or procedure? And your allegation has to do with services not rendered for that particular allegation, right? You could go and you could start a conversation with those people, right? You can have an anonymous, you could write an email to them, you could do whatever. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's out there that I think people, you really, when you say, Matt, it's limitless, it really is limitless to whatever your brain is thinking at the time. But there are certainly a ton of these tools. And for people who have used tools like Accurint or Clear, what everybody should understand is they're not creating data. They're not creating data. It's a little bit like Bloomberg, the Bloomberg terminal that everybody talks about. Bloomberg became expert at bringing data in from a million different sources and putting it into one place. Accurint is nothing more than an investigative tool where they've gone out and have connections to a myriad of data sources, state, local, federal, what have you. And most of that is stuff that you can get either free or at low cost. And if you don't have a budget for some of these things, there may be some other ways. Like as an SIU investigator, do we really care if Matt Kachansky has a valid driver's license in the state of Nevada? We might, right? If we think that he's supposed to be working at his office in Maryland, but he's got a driver's license in Nevada. But, you know, now we're starting to get very nuanced in an investigative process. Whereas, again, if you're a smaller plan, it's really more about what's the allegation and getting that money back. So Wade, I want to go back to you as we kind of run out of time, because, you know, one of the big things is a lot of this has to do with when you don't have a lot of money and you don't have a big budget, most of the time you're spending your day at your desk. And so you have to be able to do these cases and get some of this, you know, so they, sometimes they call it open source intelligence, OSINT, very common, right? It's deep web, dark web, it's all of that, but it's all of this is open source, right? None of this is closed information or proprietary. And everybody has their favorite sites and what have you, but there's, you know, and I know we try to stay away from checklists, but there's clearly going to be a handful of things that should just be part of any investigative wheelhouse. What are some of the things that you think are the couple, three, five, like what are the things that people who are doing payment integrity investigative work, what are the things they should always be looking at? Doesn't have to be a specific site, but what should people always be checking?
Well, a couple of things, but one thing I think that you hit on that is very important is knowing how to phrase a search, whether it be Google or another website, the Boolean phrase or the difference between, you know, A and B or A or B. You know, there's those a couple different words can make all the difference in the world. And doing a query that brings back, you know, maybe a couple hundred or 100 hits, as opposed to if you have a very broad query, you're going to get, you know, 10,000 hits, and you might as well start over because you're not going to be able to get anything effective out of that. So I think that's a key point. And the part about Googling how to do an accurate Google query is probably a good starting point for a lot of people too. But other than that, I think it's a matter of, I think it's important to, as Matt said, look at press releases from the OIG, from DOJ, from, you know, your local DA's office or whatever, just to know what's going on in your area. Talk about broad as local. There might be things in LA that are going on that you might be affected by, as opposed to something on the East Coast or wherever. So I think that's important, not maybe case specific, but to have a general idea of what's happening in your area. Right. Maybe just do a search on, like you say, if it's podiatry fraud, what's happening with podiatry convictions in your area. So that's another important spot.
But yeah, we say all the time, all for its local, right? So you've got those local press releases are good sources and right?
Yeah. And then I think also just talking to others in your unit, SIU unit, if there's an abundance of cases that relate to, you know, the electronic verification where you have home health aides who aren't licensed or they're not doing the automatic check-in, they're checking in manually, those types of things. There's probably more than one of those types of cases in your district, your unit, your state, whatever. So I think it's important to talk to the others on your team. If you have a case, you know, explain what your allegation is. You're probably going to get somebody who says, yeah, I work one the same way, and this is the route I took, or these are the steps I took, or the things that became blockages for me. So that's a very important thing too, to talk to the rest of the team, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you can get some great intelligence from that. Like particularly, so we talk about EVV, electronic visit verification. You know, one of the biggest areas that you see in home health fraud are the home health assistants working for 3, 4, and 5 different firms and claiming to work 8 hours a day at all of them. And, you know, each one of these firms, they don't share information about Matt Kachansky works for me or he works for me. A lot of times it's very difficult to uncover that. But think about if an instance where you and I were both working on a case involving EVV in the same geographic area, and maybe I have a list of all the employees, and now you have a list of all the employees, and maybe we get somebody to help us and we sit down and holy cow, we've got some crossover where that can happen. So, you know, one of the things I think is like here, I'm just going to show this real quick is how to search on Google. So this is exactly what I was talking about is here's, you know, you can get in here, you can fact check things, tips and tricks. And all I did was I just typed in how to Google in Google, and I got support.google.com. So there's, you know, a lot of the information that you need is actually there. And the information that you're not sure, you can find by Googling. So you can Google to Google. to find the things that you want. So I'm excited to see what our summer intern puts together. I know that he's diligently working on a fairly large list. Obviously, you know, the internet is huge and we can never hit everyone. We're trying to hit some of the more common sites for people. And we're going to be getting that out in the next couple of weeks. We'll have that done, and we'll put some information out on social media, on our webpage, on our LinkedIn page about we're giving this away. We want the SIU community to have something that they can use as a free resource. Just to have it, save it. It'll be an Excel spreadsheet. You'll be able to click on things as you need. Everything will be hyperlinked, and you'll find some of these sites are going to be useful to you. Some of them may not be useful to you, but you've got to always weigh out from that SIU perspective. And again, particularly for your smaller plans, you've got to weigh out what is the cost benefit analysis for when you start to bring in things that cost money, when you're bringing in case managers, when you start bringing in data analytic tools, when you start bringing in investigative tools like the Accurants of the world. All of those things work against your ROI, right? Because there's a cost for that. Maybe you don't need the high-tech case management tool. Maybe you need something very low-tech. Maybe it's just a spreadsheet. Maybe you just need to have somebody who knows how to program in SQL and write a visual for SQL. Maybe you don't need a high-tech data analytics tool. Maybe you just need a really good data scientist who knows healthcare, who can data mine right within Access or Excel and knows how to do things like export things out to Power BI, for example. So some of these are things that can shape the way your SIU is successful, but still keep those costs relatively commensurate with what those needs of the unit are. So good stuff. We're going to keep bringing this stuff up because it's all about ROI, and it's all about, you know, making sure that in the days of thin budgets, we're seeing it all the time now. Plans are laying people off left and right. Even the bigger payers are finding that there's layoffs going on because of budget cuts and things of that sort. So we're trying to find novel ways ourselves to do the same with less. You can never do more with less. You can do the same with less, but you can't really do more. But I guess if you have fewer people and you're doing the same, are you really doing more with less? I mean, maybe you are. I don't know. It's a little bit like Schrodinger's cat. I guess we're never going to know until we open the box and look. As always, guys, it's always a good time seeing you. I'm happy to have the time with you. Thanks to everybody who's tuning in. Again, sign up for our newsletter. Just go to our refreshed, brand new, sexy webpage. We've got a little bit of a new logo. It's got a new look. You can sign up for the email blast that comes out every Friday, where you'll find the OIG roundtables. You'll find previous recordings of our LinkedIn Lives and the like. The OIG roundtable is always in the newsletter. You can also get it off of our webpage. Excited, a couple of weeks, I'm going to be speaking with Stephen Bittinger, who is a lawyer with K.L. Gates in South Carolina, and he is an expert in data analytics with respect to statistical sampling and how statistical sampling is used for overpayments and extrapolations. We're going to spend some time talking about the very sexy topic of statistical sampling, overpayment extrapolation, chapter 8 of the PIM. I know a lot of you have it next to your bed like a Bible, and each night you read a couple of verses of the PIM. I can understand that. And we're going to talk a lot about that. So good to have everybody for this week's episode. And as always, we'll see you on the next episode of the OIG Roundtable. Thanks.